Tonight, I am real excited to be able to introduce Permelia to the crowd again. She spoke a few years back, and really seems like it's overdue. I love it when she shares. She'll tell you what the problem is, but she's always got a solution. Permelia, take over.
Oh, well, gosh, thank God. I'm Permelia. I'm an alcoholic. You're a real good-looking group tonight. Thank you for being here. I tell you, I grew up on the south side of town, near the airport. College Park, Hayville, East Point. I'm real familiar with that area. And the more I stay sober, the better my childhood looks. I just had the normal stuff. I went to school, made friends, had meals, did homework, just the regular kind of stuff. There wasn't any drinking in my family, but since I've been in AA, I've begun to examine things that happened in my early childhood and to talk to my relatives about what their childhoods were like. And I could see strains of untreated alcoholism throughout my whole life, my growing up life. Things like got to have things my own way. That was a good thing. My mom got to have things her own way. My dad used silent scorn as a way of showing his anger. And see, I didn't realize any of this until I got to AA. My parents were divorced when I was about 11. And I guess that I've been thinking over my childhood preparing for this story. And I guess it's like an onion. The layers come off in peels. And I think it was after the divorce that things started changing for me. I felt like I was an outcast. I felt different from anyone else. I stopped talking about my feelings. And I was hurt and angry that my dad didn't live with us anymore. And I didn't have any safe place to say that. My mother was hurt and angry also. And the way she chose to express that is that she badmouthed my father for many, many, many years. I took my first drink during that time. I was about 11. The word got around in the neighborhood that there were some boys down the street, teenagers, that were going to be drinking some beer that night. And it got around somehow that we were all going to meet down there. I asked my mother, could I go out? And wouldn't you know it, she said no. But I went anyway. And sat around with the fellas. I think maybe I took maybe one sip of beer and got back to the house, and she asked me where I'd been that night, and I said real nonchalant, like, 11 years old now, oh, I just been out drinking some beer. And the reaction was swift and powerful, believe me. But, you know, as I've been thinking over my past and talking about it, that was the first time I had ever associated alcohol with the boys and with romance and with rebelling and doing something that I really shouldn't be doing, excitement. That's the first time I'd ever associated that. And as I was preparing for this story, I could see that it seemed like I pretty much always covered up my feelings. I pretty much always haven't known how to deal with things. I've never known how to really deal with things. So I would cover up my feelings to a big extent. After my parents were divorced, we sort of became the outcasts of the neighborhood. We grew up in a neighborhood where there was a father, mother, kids. And so now it's just the mother and the kids. And it may not have been this way at all, but I felt like I was an outcast. I had to come to AA to figure out that the way I was feeling may not have been how it really was at all. It's just the way I was feeling about the situation. So it was pretty much a battle. I just felt different. And of course, from that perspective, things are going to look to me like I was treated differently and all like that. I didn't really drink too much until later. I went to grammar school, high school, all the usual stuff, and past all understanding is the patience that mothers, well, in my case, mothers, but the literature says mothers and other family members have with the alcoholic. Because once I began to drink, it just unlocked something in me. And I got real inappropriate. I know that's hard to believe, looking at this. But I got very inappropriate. And I took my first hostage at the age of 17. I thought that after high school, the world ended. And I just might as well go ahead and get married. And after looking at it, since I've been sober, I realized that I was getting away from my mother. You know, what a load to put on a young man. A wife that's marrying him to get away from her mother. What a load to put on somebody. So I really had to ask for forgiveness for myself and for him also. When I was 19 and enrolled in nursing school, I had a horrendous car accident. And you may notice a little bit of speech impediment that I have right now. That's left over from that car accident. But I don't know. After that, I really started to feel less than. And it's just so amazing how all that centered on my speech impediment. Never was I grateful that I made it through the car wreck. I could still walk. I could still talk. I could still eat, see, hear. No, it was all about the speech impediment. See, I felt different. I felt different from others, so I just focused on this one thing. Oh, if only things were different. And you know, that didn't change until I got to AA. And somebody just looked me straight in the eyes and says, "Get off of it." And also, I saw a man who had his voice box removed and had to talk through a handheld voice box. And I just went, oh, gosh, but for the grace of God. You know, drinking is not too much of an obsession with me anymore. It's my thinking that I have to deal with on a daily basis. You know, someone said to me, I've got to put up with myself on a daily basis. I have to wake up and look myself in the eye. So, I don't know. After I had that car wreck, I was just feeling so bad about myself that I began to drink and use drugs on a daily basis. Anything to cover up myself. And since I've been sober, I've had to look back over that time and try to find something positive about that time in my life. I was able to go back to nursing school after I had that accident and graduate, and I worked for 38 years as a nurse. And you know, I had to have touched somebody's life during that time. So that's what I just had to say to myself. I finally just was hurting so bad. I was just hurting so bad on the inside that the people at my job intervened on me. I got a job with the Fulton County Alcoholism Treatment Center while it was on Boulevard. Now, can you imagine a drunk nurse trying to teach others how to live without alcohol? But I tell you, that's where the seed was planted, because I can recall now one of the doctors saying, one is too many and 1,000 not enough. And I could relate to that. I had to wait till I got to AA to realize that it was the first drink that set in motion the obsession. I was just stunned when I got to AA and they said, if you don't drink, you won't get drunk. You know, how simple. If you don't put it in, you won't drink. I was working the night shift at the Fulton County Alcoholism Treatment Center, and it had just gotten so bad that I would drag myself into work drunk, set up the few little medicines I could, make sure everyone was medicated, and then I would lay down on the couch there in the open room and go to sleep. And if one of the patients would come down and ask for Medicaid, detoxing patients now, you know how, and ask for some medication, I can recall rising up and just cursing them for waking me up. And so they reported me. They intervened on me. They called me into the office. See, the amazing thing, today I believe that God set that up just the way it was supposed to be. Because at any other job, every other job I would have, they would say, you messed up, you're fired. At the Fulton County Alcoholism Treatment Center, they said, let us help you. And that made all the difference in the world to me. I got my first sponsor was the nurse who intervened on me. She only had 1 year sober at that time. And of course, I used to hear stories about her, you know, the office grapevine and all. And so she made a comment to me. She confronted me. She said, well, we've had some reports about your inappropriate behavior. Oh, what are you talking about? Oh, no, not me, not me. And she said, where there's smoke, there's usually fire. And through a set of circumstances, I was able to acknowledge that I was drinking to the excess, and it was really affecting my behavior. Through a set of circumstances, I was led to a halfway house and on to AA, and I went to a halfway house out in Decatur, well-known halfway house, Breakthrough, and I started going to AA meetings. and started working on myself. And man, it was painful. I did a fifth step, and someone held me in their arms while I cried over having mentioned some things. And I tell you, like a true alcoholic, I got real arrogant and thought I owned the halfway house, you know. They quickly told me, it's time for you to go. Someone asked me what step I was working, and I said the fifth step. And apparently they thought, well, she's ready. And they asked me to leave, and I went to a three-quarter way house and then was able to be discharged back to my old apartment. And I'm telling you, I know I've said this before, but past all understanding is the patience and tolerance that family members have for us. My mother, whom I had much maligned, was there for me, as she's been there for me many a time. And she was there for me, and I lived with her for a bit until I went back to my apartment in Virginia Highlands. Yes. Started going to the Dogwood Club when it was there on North Highland behind Johnny's Pizza. And was able to make some friends and have fellowship and all. And one day we saw this announcement up on the board about New Year's Eve dance at the Tara Club in Hapeville. And I thought to myself, well, gosh, that's my old stomping ground. Why don't I go down there to that Tara Club? And then when I got to the Tara Club, this old fella asked me to square dance. And I felt like I had come home. So I arranged that I would move back to the Tara Club and move back to Hayville. And I've just been so happy. I just love the South Side. I just love the way the land lies down there and the way that things come together and all. And I just love it down there. When I was 9 years sober, I was able to buy a house in Hayville. And I tell you, they didn't explain to me that the grass was going to grow. So I've had to learn to, for 18 years, I mowed my lawn, you know. I got such a kick out of it. I don't have the obsession to drink anymore, but it's my thinking that gets me into trouble. I'll go to meetings and they'll talk about selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the key to our problem. And it never occurred to me that I was drinking because I was into myself. I thought it was because all these people had done these things to me. And I thought it was because I was different from everyone else. But I got to AA and my first sponsor said, get off of it. You are no different from anyone else. And they say that in the big book somewhere. We doubt that we are any more different than normal people in certain situations. So I tell you, they talk about selfishness and self-centeredness. And I raised my hand and said, you know, that is not me. I always put a dollar in the basket. I always smile at people, try to talk to the newcomers. But then you let something not go my way. And you let somebody say something to me that offends me. And then we'll begin to see the alcoholic come out with a nail. There used to be a poster that with a cat hanging on by its claws, saying everything I ever let go of had claw marks. Well, I'm here to say that that is so for me. It's a process for me to let go of things. So I went back down to Tara, and through a set of circumstances, I had to move back in with my mother. And she was so glad to have me there. Why? Because she can tell me what to do now. See, since I've been sober and not clouding up my mind, I can see these things. So there I am, 35 years old, living with my mother again, and I'm upset because she doesn't do things the way I want her to. I am in her house, and I'm upset because she's not doing the things I want her to. I called up my sponsor and talked with her about this, and she said, I want you to go downstairs and look your mother straight in the eye and say, I'm sorry for everything I've ever done to you. And I really had to pause a minute because I'm so caught up in what my mother has done to me. Not what I've done to her, but it says, are we willing to go to any length? So I went downstairs and did that. I looked her straight in the eye and said, Mother, I'm sorry for everything I've ever done to you. And you know, I expected her to say, well, oh, baby, that's okay. Don't worry about it. But what she said was, you have done a lot to me. So I can see it hadn't been really easy being my mother. But, you know, after I did that, things sort of shifted between my mother and me. It was really awesome. Now I can let her stuff be her stuff. Most of the time, I can let her stuff be her stuff. I was about 20 years sober before I realized that my dad isn't getting any younger. I'm not getting any younger. My dad's not getting any younger. So I just decided to start sending him Father's Day cards. We've been estranged for all these years. And I just decided to start sending him Father's Day cards. For about 5 or 6 years, I've been calling him up and saying, well, I just wanted to say hello and find out how you're doing. And then the conversation will progress from there. And I realized that my dad's a human being also. He's got wishes and desires, and he has hope for the future, and he prays. I just recently was introduced to a book about, now it does say in the literature that we are to avail ourselves of outside help when it's appropriate. There are many fine doctors, and that we should avail ourselves of outside help. So I just recently came across this book about letting go your anger against men. And what it says is, start listing the things you like about men. And if you can't think of any, here's a list for you. And start out saying things like, men are loving, men are faithful, men have hope for the future, men pray. And since I've been saying that to myself, things have kind of shifted for me. Men are loving, men are kind. I've just started to say that to you, to myself. I've started going to a senior center in Hayville because I retired from being a nurse. And after a year or so, it finally sank in that, you know, I would get up every morning and cry because there wasn't any place to go anymore, you know. Finally started to sink in that I'm retired and it is up to me to get out and do some things. So I started going to a senior center, and this one old lady there just gets my goat. Like I was saying, I don't think about drinking anymore. In fact, someone pointed out to me that alcohol is only mentioned in the first part of the first step. The rest of the steps are about what's on the inside of us and working on our feelings. And I'm still not over that. I still can't even hardly bring myself to look at her, but it's because of fear. It is because of fear. There's something I'm afraid of about her, and I've been able to say that to myself, something that I'm afraid of. And I stopped smoking cigarettes about 13 years ago. No, excuse me, about 16 years ago. And the tail club, they were still smoking. So I looked around and I visited the NABA club, and I just fell in love with the place. I love the people. I love what they have to say. And in fact, I take what I hear up here and go back to Tara and say it, and they think I'm a guru or something. In fact, I just heard something tonight that I didn't know. Tim and I were talking about the 24-hour day book. And I thought that my sponsor mentioned that was all that they had back in the 60s to read and all. And I just learned tonight, I hope I'm saying this right, that money from that book does not go to AA. I just learned that tonight. And my first sponsor was that lady who intervened on me at Fulton County Alcoholism Treatment Center, and she really helped me. I called her every day and just talked with her. See, I'd isolated myself for so long, and I'd stayed alone inside my head for so long that realizing that someone was interested in me and my welfare was a big thing for me. So I did call her regularly. And after about a year or so, I did my first fifth step with her in the front yard of the halfway house. And after about a year or so, she stopped returning my calls. And I couldn't ever really figure it out. Since that time, someone has told me that sponsors have lives, too. Sponsors have to work and to make meals, and they have spouses and all like that. But I tell you, I ran into Jan a couple of years ago at a meeting on the South Side, and she was trying to get back from a relapse. She'd had 20 years sober and was trying to get back from a relapse. And I thought, oh, my. I recall someone saying that be careful how you treat the newcomer because they may wind up being your sponsor one day. And that's really kind of a sobering thought to me. My second sponsor I found at the Tarot Club named Eleanor, just a graceful older woman who had many years sober, and she was kind of a stabilizing force in my life. I'm telling you, I was so out of it when I got to AA that people had to tell me that when you get an unexpected bill in the mail, don't ignore it. Don't put it off the side and ignore it. Call them up and find out what's going on and pay, or either promise to pay, the bill. So it's just little life on life terms, things like that, that you people have taught me to, I tell you, I overheard once that someone said that he knew he had arrived when his driver's license and checkbook both had the same address on it. And I feel like I pretty much arrived because I've paid utilities for the past 20 years. If they ever dare to put a late fee on my utility bill, I am on the phone talking about, I have been a long time customer and I don't know why you would do this, but will you take it off? And I'll be damned if a lot of times they won't take it off. Because I pay my bills now. You know, I'm not buying extracurricular stuff and all. And when I stopped smoking and came to the Terror Club, I was looking for a sponsor. And I overheard this woman sharing about a joke from the grapevine that, let me see if I can get this right now. The woman said, and this was printed in the grapevine. I couldn't hardly believe it. I wish I could find that copy. But she said, when I take a drink, my panties fall down. I could relate to that. Because I had to have a drink. I had to be drunk to have any type of social interaction of that nature. But that woman told that joke, and I thought, well, that's the girl for me. She understands. Had a lot of sobriety, long-term member of AA. Helen Moore was her name, and I'm certain she wouldn't mind me saying that. But she helped me, too. She helped me a lot, becoming mature and someone to talk to and all. But as things happen in life, she came to an age where cardiac problems and all began to show on her, and she eventually had to move to Smyrna in a assisted living facility because her health, she became impaired in her health and all. And I was just praying one night or saying affirmations or something, and it came to me that I should really try to be there for her. So I would, at least once a month, I would go to Smyrna and pick her up and bring her to a meeting here in Napa. And I must say that I am proud of myself for doing that. Sometimes it's for selfish reasons. Because we'd come into a meeting and y'all would say, oh, thank you, Pamelia. Thank you for going by after Helen. My chest would just swell, and oh, what a good AA member I am, you know, going after my sponsors. But at least I can say to myself that I did try. And I've learned to say that about my parents. I don't want to have them pass away and have me say to myself that, well, I wish I had seen more of Mother. Well, I wish I had seen more of Dad. I try to call my dad 3 times a week, just to say hello and say, how you doing? And I learned to do that right here in these rooms. Someone told me, suggested that I do that. I tell you, life's pretty good for me right now. I'll be coming up on number 30. Big number 30 in September. Yes. Yes. And sometimes I just can't hardly believe it. Seems like I've still got 2.5 years sober. Seems like I was 2.5 years sober for 5 years. Seemed like time would never move. And now look, you know, I just kept going to meetings. I do go to meetings because I feel love here, you know. I love what my friend Bud says quite often about he heard something from someone talking about, I can go to bed at night in a wonderful mood and wake up in the morning and my clothes don't fit right and nobody likes me. I can relate to that. I can go to bed feeling just great and wake up and just be scared to death. But I head straight for my meditations and open up the book and start reading. You know, I'm pretty happy now. I've got people who like me. I like people. And I'm telling you, for years and years and years, I stood off in the corner and pointed my finger at people who go to church. You hypocrites. Point my finger at them. I get sober and I realize that they're the ones with the paid-off houses. They're the ones with the children and the paid-off cars, and their kids go to college. And I've just realized so much since I've come to this program. And, you know, I like myself on most days. I like myself. Back to this, I'm fit to wrap it up, but back to this speech impediment. I was just so upset because I have this speech impediment until I realized that I can call up the banks and they will give me my balance without my PIN number. Because they recognize my voice. And I thought, well, gosh, well, maybe it ain't so bad, you know. I mostly had a lot of fun in AA. Sometimes I get so deep into myself that I could just scream. But I come to AA and I hear the laughter and I can laugh back at people. And I'm reminded that this place has really changed my life. I'm pretty happy today. Thanks to y'all. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Familia. Just crack me up. I love it. I love listening to you share, too.
If the river keep rising, water gonna overflow. If that river keep rising, flood water gonna overflow. Just like that old river, baby, it's my time to go. bank's gonna overrun. Everything torn apart. You know I can't quit you. I can't stand back my heart. When that flood was